Here I am, climbing up, feeling great, getting love. Here I go, risk it all, be worth it now, and that's for sure. Watch me as a rocketeer.
Episode 43 of Fight Talk Down Under is brought to you by CMBT Nutrition. Go to cmbt.com.au for all your protein powder, protein bars, pre-workout, all that good stuff. Of course, CMBT are big supporters of Aussie MMA, so make sure you go and give them some love at cmbt.com.au. Use the promo code Justin for 10% off at the checkout. That's cmbt.com.au, promo code Justin. We're also brought to you by Nutcare. Now, guys, the fact is that 83% of penile injuries involve a razor, but it doesn't have to be this way. Bare Nuts Hair Removal Cream is much easier and safer than shaving and far less painful and time-consuming than waxing. So join the grooming revolution. Go to nutcare.com.au. Use the promo code FIGHTNEWS for 10% off at the checkout. That's nutcare.com.au, promo code FIGHTNEWS. Welcome everyone. Of course, I'm Dan from Fight News Australia and One Championship. And obviously, the theme of this week's episode is the colour yellow. We've sort of coordinated our outfits this week. So if you're watching on YouTube, you're welcome. Of course, my co-host here is the eternal featherweight champion, Lockjaw Justin Van Heerden. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good. Also, while we're at it, I'll take this opportunity real quick. I want to announce that I'm vacating the eternal bantamweight title. I'm going to put that up for grabs again, give some other people a chance to fight for a belt. As much as I'd like to stay the dual champion, I'll give that one up and just, keep my featherweight title. But no, we're doing good. It's all happening. We're just training, watching fights, breaking down fights. We're just doing all the fun stuff, it's all about fights when we're on Fight Talk Down Under. So what more can you ask for?
It really is. We've got plenty of fights to break down as well. Of course, we're going to touch on Eternal 77, which just went down over the weekend. And then we've got International Fight Week, UFC 290. Plenty of Aussies in action this weekend. So, of course, you'll have plenty to say about that. But, we'll start with Eternal. Obviously, Eternal 77 went down over the weekend. We'll go sort of fight by fight through the main card and get some opinions. So of course, Dom Marfan versus Jordan Thomas was the first one. What was the result there? Oh yeah, Dom Marfan won on points. So yeah, what did you make of Dom's performance?
Yeah, it was a good fight. He shut down everything that Jordan was trying to offer him and a lot of sort of heavy grappling wrestling sort of approach, which we can expect from Dom, kind of nullified the opportunities for Jordan to do lots of work on the feet. I mean, there were small glimpses as all fights start, every round starts on the feet. So there were small glimpses where Jordan showed what he's, where he was dangerous and what he's capable of doing. But ultimately the gap in the ability and the wrestling and the grappling was just too big. And Dom just kind of like capitalized, had all the control time and was just, doing all his work in that area. And I've when I was based in Brisbane, I got to grapple and compete against Dom a few times. So he's got very good grappling, very good wrestling. And I can imagine now that he's at Compton, since moving to Team Compton, he's like improved in those areas as well as with his striking. But one thing that I did take away from the fight, which I understand like your teammate's Tom Nolan and you want to try and follow suit and be exciting and entertain and do all that sort of stuff. But there was a couple of times where they separated from the clinch or the grappling and the wrestling, and Dom kind of willed Jordan on in the striking, and he got hit with some big shots and he got clipped. And there was a couple of times where he was like in danger, and then obviously, he was able to shoot, get some control, but that's just silliness in my opinion. You're not Tom Nolan. And also trying to stand there and bang with someone and like will someone on and take shots to try and be that little bit more entertaining just because the crowd's starting to cheer a little bit. Like you're in a fight where you're easily winning and now you're taking an unnecessary risk, and it's not a calculated risk. Potentially, giving someone the opportunity to knock you the fuck out and put you away. Like that's not, in my opinion, that's just silliness. So moving forward, I would, I'd not want to see that. If I was anyone that's involved or around Dom, I wouldn't want to see that. But yeah, other than that, it was a dominant performance and you can't really take much away from him other than, you know, those little kind of couple lapses he had here and there.
Yeah, I guess you can sort of see where that comes from, can't you? Like, people want to be kind of memorable and they want to sort of put on these fun fights and those sorts of things. But I guess when you're coming up on the local scene, it's probably not worth, you know, the risk versus reward probably isn't really worth it, right?
Yeah, you're not getting paid 50K because you put on an exciting fight. So, like, yeah, I get it. But there's a calculated, you know, there's calculated risks you can take and where you know where you're still being entertaining and it's still getting the crowd going, but you're not putting yourself in like a situation where it's literally like one or two punches away from being like over because you just want to be silly and stand there and get punched in the face and go, oh yeah, let's go, come on, let's go. Like, it's just dumb. I think people see like Nate Diaz and Nick Diaz, you know, and they see people like that are, and like Michael Chandler and stuff like that, you know, dropping their hands and willing people on. But it's like, cool, you want to be exciting or do you want to win fights and progress forward? Because you can do both, but there's when you're going one or the other and you're just putting all your eggs in that basket, like you're just asking to get put away, really, in my opinion.
Yeah, you don't want to end up on one of those highlight reels either. That's, you know, that's pretty damaging, you know, when showboating goes wrong sort of thing. That's, yeah, it's pretty hard to live stuff like that down on the, you know, in the internet age.
Yeah, it doesn't go away. It stays there forever. So, yeah, no, we don't want to do that. But other than that, like I said, it was a dominant performance. And I think that he's looking for a quick turnaround for September. So, be good to see who he gets on that card and who they throw, what sort of matchup they throw together.
Definitely. And yeah, following that one was Brogan Stewart versus Josh Grove. I've seen a fair bit of chatter about this one on social media. Obviously, the fight ended in a draw. Yeah, so I guess, how did you see it? How did you score it?
Very close fight. I'm not mad at a draw, but I did sort of say this, even on the Eternal thing, like, because I saw a couple of people being like, oh, Brogan was robbed or he should have won. And, you know, it's, in my opinion, it was a very close fight. He definitely won. Brogan won the third round, but I had it 2-1 at the end of the fight. If you were going to, like, I could see a draw being, I could see you giving them a, like a draw. I could see that being the case. But if you were going to be like, edge it more in one direction for one of the fighters, I'd go to Josh. Cause you know, I feel like he did more in rounds one and two. And you know, but it was still a close fight. I felt like Brogan was just, I don't know, was just kind of like, to be honest, just put it bluntly, he was just fucking around a lot of the time. Like, I've trained with him previously when I was based in Brisbane. He's a collegiate wrestler and he's, you know, got a Taekwondo background. He's got very good striking. He lived in Thailand for a while because outside of fighting, he's a model. So he was based in Thailand modeling and training. He briefly fought for one championship. But he's got, you know, he's got a lot of skills, a lot of, you know, he's got a lot of pedigree like behind him with different sort of martial arts and stuff like that. So it's, yeah, it's just, in my opinion, it was just like he was just sitting in there mucking around. Same sort of thing like we were just talking about. It was like he was trying too much to be entertaining or like to put on a show in terms of just, all right, how about I just win this fight and like, you know, actually use the skills that I got. And then, so I felt like that was real weird after the fight. Then at the end, when they spoke to him, he was like, oh, I was very confused by the decision. I was trying to get into a fight or whatever. Like, it was just like, if you're a collegiate wrestler and you've got all these, you've got this background behind you and you've got all this like pedigree in martial arts, like realistically, he should have been able, and he's a lot bigger than Josh. He should have been able to run through him in that fight. Cause it was at a catch weight too of like 67 kilos. So in my opinion, Josh did more. There wasn't much damage in the first few rounds. So you got to go to the next thing on the scoring criteria, which is like the cage pressure, the aggression and the control. And Josh had all of those. So yeah, I'm not mad at a draw, but if I were to lean towards one person, it'd be to Josh getting the win. But I mean, a draw is a draw. Both guys stay undefeated. They've an unblemished record, as they say. But yeah, Just a technical close fight with a lot of high level wrestling exchanges, if you sort of break it down.
Yeah, I actually had no idea that Brogan fought in one championship. And just looking at my records here, he fought in one championship in February this year, which was is obviously during my tenure there. I had no idea. Didn't even spot him on the spreadsheet there. He's had a win as well. He's had two wins actually under the one banner. So yeah, he's obviously got some decent level experience in his short sort of professional career so far. But I guess with the, how does the draw come about? Have we seen a like a scorecard or anything like that? Are we doing 10-10 rounds now? Was there a 10-8 along the way? Did you feel like how have the scorecards ended up in?
Well, I think they announced it as a majority draw or something or something like that. But it was actually a split draw because I think one judge had it 10. It was like one judge had it 10-9 to Brogan, I believe. One judge might have even had it 10-8 to Josh or something like that. And then, or like even, yeah, I don't know. It was like weird. And then obviously one judge gave it to them as like a 10-10. So it was like, they announced it as a majority draw, but it was like a split draw. So it was, yeah, it was just real weird. I can't remember the scores off the top of my head, but it was real weird. It was very weird the way they did it because if you had it with like, you know, the one judge, it was like 10-9, 10-9, and then one judge, you know, is like, oh, I thought it was close and it was a draw. That makes sense. But the way they announced it is that it was a majority draw, which wasn't the case. I don't think two judges gave him a draw on the scorecards.
Yeah, I'd be quite surprised if there was two judges giving a 10-10 or whatever it may be. But it's probably a split draw. Sounds more like it. But yeah, it's kind of a weird one. You don't see too many 10-10s, in the modern game. You see draws come about where there's like a deduction or like a 10-8 round scored somewhere along the line. But don't really see too many with a drawn round. So there you go.
Yeah, no, it was interesting. It was interesting that it went that way.
Definitely. And anyway, Ethan Thomas also made his return. He's been out of the cage for about 4 years. Took on Hyun Suk Song, a international opponent, and he's gotten the job done. What was the result again? Oh, I think it was a decision with that one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. What did you make of that fight?
I mean, it was pretty. Yeah, it was all right.
like when the voice gets high like that, you know, something's, he's about to drop something.
I don't know, man. It's not a jiu-jitsu match. Like, I watched 15 minutes of jiu-jitsu. It was cool. Like, you know, he did good. He had all the control and threatened a couple submission attempts and that. But other than that, just kind of, didn't really do much. So you want to fight on control time, really, because he didn't do much damage to his opponent at all. And there's, you know, if we're looking at who's actually actively trying to win the fight, I would lean to his opponent who was actually trying to get back to his feet and then do damage and win the fight. Obviously, he attempted a few subs in that, but it wasn't, for a guy that's as talented in that area as he is, he should have been able to put his opponent away. Thomas should have been able to win that fight and get a submission. And if you look at his fights and who he's fought, he's only lost to like high caliber people, dangerous lightweights like Blake Donnelly and Dave Martinez. So, I don't know. Like, I get probably been out of the cage for a while and, you know, there's all that, maybe that factors in for some people. I don't know. But, looking at it and looking at the sort of, in hindsight, looking at that fight now, that was meant to happen between him and Abdallah, that's not a good matchup. That would have been rough in the opposite direction. It would have been like looking at it stylistically, you'd think, oh yeah, someone who's a black belt with that level of grappling, that level of wrestling is going to be able to secure a position and control someone like Abdallah and get a finish. But if you struggle to submit a guy who had none of the grappling or wrestling pedigree, at all, a guy who prefers to get his job done on the feet, and you weren't able to do that, now you add in someone like Abdallah who's a lot longer, a lot taller, probably a little bit stronger. I'm actually happy that fight didn't happen now, because I think it would have been a rough night in the office for Ethan. But either way, like, you know, maybe let's hope he's just shaking out the cobwebs and, you know, he's got that first fight back in after 4 years. And then this, if he, you know, if he gets on the Sydney card or he fights again, let's hope he can show more of what he's capable of, because I'm sure there is more talent there. I'm sure there is more work that he's been doing in these last 4 years. I can't imagine he's just, you know, been doing like just grappling. I imagine he's got other skills to showcase, but he just, yeah, maybe he was just, you know, got back in there. It was a, sort of like a one-track mind type thing. This is working, so I'm just going to stick to that. But it's just there's the lack of intent to finish the fight and just do damage was just not there. So I don't know. It was cool. Like, you controlled a guy for 15 minutes and you want to fight, but I don't know. Looking at the landscape and some of the matchups moving forward, like I saw Callum Potter say he'd like to see a matchup between him and Jarrett. But even then, you look at the landscape of featherweight, you look at some of the other fights there, you throw him in there with someone like Diego. You throw him in there with someone like Alavi. It's going to be a rough night if you don't have another sort of avenue or another skill set that you're going to try and work in as well, because, you know, you need to be sort of, you can't just have like a one track approach in some of these fights. Like, you just, yeah, it's just not going to work. It works against a certain level of opposition and then it's just going to slip away from you and it's not going to be a thing anymore. So I hope that they've taken out some good things and then they've also recognized that, and then they're going to sort of put together something a bit more fluent and a bit more sort of, yeah, effective for if he gets back in there in Sydney, which I imagine he will, and he will want to do.
Yeah, are you a ring rust guy? Like, I know it's a debate that sort of goes on. Some people believe that ring rust is a thing. Other people say it's a fallacy. Where do you sit on the ring rust debate?
Well, fortunately, I've not really had that long of a time off ever in my career so far. So, yeah, but I don't think it's a thing. I don't think it's a thing. I think it's just like, yeah, it's something that people just put on themselves, but I don't think it actually is a thing, especially, you look at people who've across the board have had long layoffs come back and then look like superstars and come in and just picked up where they left off. So I don't know. And then you've seen other people come back and then they lose, but I think that's just them. I think that's them putting the pressure on themselves and not rising to the occasion. I really don't think ring rust is a thing.
Yeah, right. There you go. And you touched on Alavi before, actually. It's been bouncing around in my head. Is he still around? I don't know. I haven't heard anything of him really since you guys fought.
I think I spoke to someone who was connected with him and they sort of said that he's looking at fighting in September potentially. But yeah, it's just, who knows? I mean, there's lots of good matchups for him if he chooses to fight again in September. Being 7-1, he's still got a really good record. He strings together a couple wins. You could tee up something with a major promotion at some point. I don't see how you couldn't. Whichever direction he'd want to go in, but I just want to see. I'd like to see him fight again from like a fan perspective. I'd like to see him fight again, and there's a bunch of intriguing matchups. I like him and Diego. I like him and Jarrett. I like him and Abdallah. I think all of those fights are cool for him. And he's fought a lightweight as well, so you know there's some potential matchups there if he wants them that could take. So
yeah, definitely. It's probably just like a time thing for him, really. Like, if he wants to make a run at a bigger promotion, he's probably got to sort of get back on the horse pretty soon, doesn't he? I think he's what, 35, 36, somewhere around there.
Yeah, 100%. He's got to get on the ball now and start pushing. Otherwise, yeah, your window kind of closes fairly quickly.
Definitely. Now, we've sort of got a bit sidetracked there, but of course, in the co-main event, Ben Johnson took out Emil Jerry's. Ben has pretty much taken his Muay Thai background and thrown it out the window, really, in MMA, hasn't he? He's won another fight by submission, two rear naked chokes on his record now. So, yeah, what did you make of his performance on the weekend?
Yeah, very impressive, and not how I saw him getting the job done. I didn't think that he'd be able to... I thought he'd be able to potentially do enough in the grappling and the wrestling to keep the fight on the feet and then sort of just, you know, pick Emil apart. But I didn't think that he'd be able to get the sort of dominant position in those areas and then, you know, get a submission. So I was very impressed by that. I actually was like talking to someone right as the fight was starting, and then they asked me, they're like, how do you see Benny Johnson winning this fight? And I said, he's either going to TKO knockout, or a decision. Like, I just, that's kind of his, the way I see it going. Like, he'll get a victory like that. I don't see him getting like a submission. And then literally like a minute later, he's got a submission. So, he's killing it. He's obviously got a good teams behind him. He obviously, you know, trains out of the Fight Center in Brisbane, but is also connected with City Kickboxing. And, you know, so he's got a bunch of high level people around him, and he's obviously showcasing that he's a well-rounded mixed martial artist. And now it's just about getting the runs on the board and getting the fights on the board, right? And getting the experience and the wins on the board in mixed martial arts, because he's obviously, you know, early days in MMA, but he's obviously got an extensive combat sports resume and background. So, yeah, we're going to – if he keeps going the way he's going, strings together a couple more wins, I have no doubt you'll see him in a top promotion. And then he's coming in there with a lot of combat sports experience, although his opponents in those top promotions will look at his MMA record and go, oh yeah, you know, this guy's a new fish. They're going to obviously get in there and realize like, oh shit, no, this guy's actually like a world-class fighter and I need to sort of be on point. But no, it was very impressive win. And obviously probably the performance of the night, really. I mean, across the board, if you look at all the fights that were on from the prelims and the main card, that's probably the most impressive performance that we saw on the night, what Benny was able to do.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, do you think, you know, like Ben's got to be close to a title shot here? Obviously they've put together a middleweight title bout between Matt Myers and Brogan Anderson. Is Anderson? Yeah. I forget when that is, maybe September.
September.
Yeah, so obviously the title's sort of held up there, but do you think Johnson might be pretty close?
Yeah, I reckon he's one win off. If he, you know, how about you throw John Martin Fraser and Benny Johnson together, and then, you know, get that one as like an eliminator to see who fights the winner of Brogan and Matt. Makes sense in my eyes.
Don't mind that at all.
John Martin Fraser fought, beat Matt Myers. They had their rematch. He lost the belt. So they're 1-1. So there's a history there. There's a story there. You know, you put him against Benny Johnson, who's on a lot of momentum, coming off a couple wins. You know, makes sense. He beats him, gets you right back there in that division. But also for Ben, it's like a no-brainer, right? He goes out there and smokes John Martin Fraser. Then he can for sure fight for the belt next, depending on who the winner is, because I don't imagine he'll want to fight Brogan as their kind of teammates. Being that Brogan's out of City Kickboxing, so if Matt Myers wins, you'd certainly see him fighting for the belt.
Yeah, it's kind of an awkward sort of situation, isn't it? And it kind of comes up from time to time on the local scene. Sort of, yeah, teammates kind of, sort of end up on the same trajectory and sort of have to avoid each other. But we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, it'll just that'll be something that he has to figure out for himself. I mean, for that fight, you just want to identify that you're fighting out of the Fight Center only, or how do you want to do it? Like, you just have to figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know.
In saying that, you know, two City Kickboxing guys fought each other in the final at King in the Ring just not too long ago. So, you know, it just depends, really. I suppose if you've got two guys, like if you got, say that happened and you threw a matchup together with Brogan and Ben, you know, both guys are on a tear, and if they're fighting for a belt, both guys are arguably in a position where the next step could be something big if they win that fight. Are you wanting to risk one guy's dreams over the other? Like, if you're from the coaching perspective, or like, you know, you, because one guy's gonna get the win and it's gonna propel him into something big, and the other guy is just gonna get knocked back like a bunch of steps and have to start up and rebuild. So that's a rough decision to make, because you're not fighting for a world title, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's just kind of awkward. Like, how would they? How would they sort of train in camp? You know, a lot of these sort of gyms aren't really equipped to sort of have two different fight camps running at once. You know, do you split the coaching team? Does one of them have to go train somewhere else for that fight camp? It's a tricky one.
Mm. Yeah, it's not a good situation really at the end of the day.
Yeah. Anyway, hopefully it doesn't come to that for those two's sake. But anyway, it's a fun sort of, I guess the middleweight sort of title picture is starting to kind of take shape a little bit. It's kind of been one of those divisions that's kind of been a bit stagnant and maybe a little bit sort of light on for sort of clear contenders. But it seems to be progressing now.
Yeah, and like for me personally, I would have, if I was, I don't know. That's sort of weird because you saw Matt Myers looking around asking for fights, and he was calling out for Jussé, and obviously Jussé's got a win over him, so he was asking for that fight, and he was looking for a fight. In hindsight now, looking at it, if I was Jussé, obviously he's trying to push for the Paris card and the Sydney card and stuff like that. I'd have almost booked in a fight at middleweight against Myers on the Sydney card for Eternal, to have like, you know, not to have it sort of locked in. If I'm already training, I'm already get grinding, doing a fight camp but I've got a matchup locked in against a guy that I've already beat. If I get a call up, sweet, I get a call up. If I don't, I'm fighting a guy that I've already beat. I'm going to, you know, he's probably coming in super confident. He's just won the middleweight title at Hex. He's the Hex welterweight champ. You know, you're fighting the night before the UFC, you win another title on another promotion. Like, it's pretty much one of those on-the-spot type deals at that point, really. I imagine they'd come see you at the back and go, welcome to the show. but at the same time, I understand why he sort of was like, oh, I've already beat this guy, I don't need to fight him again. So, but in saying that, I'm happy that they then looked at the landscape and they were like, threw this matchup together between Myers and Brogan. So that division's starting to get some traction, and there's more and more challenges starting to pop up. So it's getting exciting.
Absolutely. And yeah, the main event on the weekend, of course, was the Smiling Assassin, Dave Martinez, the former two-time lightweight champion against Kieran Joblin. And I guess Dave did what Dave does in the end, doesn't he? He sort of, stayed heavy on top, got the unanimous decision. What do you make of it?
Yeah, it's just same as very similar to the fight with Dom Marfan. It was like Dave did good with his sort of trademark pressure and wrestling and grappling, and was able to, you know, secure a lot of control time. He did threaten at one stage and have like a deep rear naked choke and was like, oh, looks like the fight was done. But obviously Joblin, 36, 37 MMA fights, very experienced. So he was able to be calm and I guess, you know, survive the position. But same thing, you know, he showed a lot of his experience in that, was able to get to the feet, back to the feet a bunch of times. And on the feet, he did a lot of good work on the feet as well. Got a couple of takedowns himself. It was a technical mixed martial arts sort of battle, but yeah, there's nothing really to look at it and go to sort of pick out. It was obviously impressive on Joblin's behalf after 5 years away to come in there and compete and, you know, take on someone like Dave, because it's not an easy fight. And then for Dave to step in there with someone who's that much more experienced, who's fought the who's who, who's now based at City Kickboxing, you know, yeah, like we said, Dave just stayed the course, stuck to the game plan, was diligent and did his thing. So yeah, do I think that he should go from this fight to fight Quinlan in September for a title? I mean, I guess you could sort of do that, but looking at that division and how exciting it is and the amount of dangerous people in that division, I mean, are we just gonna repeat the same cycle? And I don't mean this in like a disrespectful way, but like, are we just gonna repeat the same cycle? Is it just gonna be Dave fights for a belt, he either wins it, or and then goes on to defend it and loses it and wins a fight, now he's fighting for the belt again? Or does he win does he get a title fight, win it or lose it, fights one more fight, then he's fighting for a title again? I think in that division there's so many people and it's like such a stacked division. I'd like to see him go out there and string another dub together, fight on that September card, get another dub, and then yeah, and then obviously if you want to, then if the next flight makes sense. But I guess that's going to come down to what they want to do, what Quinlan wants to do, what, yeah, obviously Martinez is 100% going to be pushing for a title fight. You can't knock the guy for that. He wants his title back. Fair enough. It's just going to depend on what Quinlan wants to do. Does he want to fight Martinez? Does he want to challenge someone like Togo? Does he want to, you know, is he going to ask for something else? Is there another option? Does Eternal have another route that they want to go? I don't know. But, yeah, I just think, like, we need to see some freshness in the lightweight title picture, and then we can go back to what we've been sort of seeing. But like we said with that belt, who knows what's going to happen? Quinlan might break his leg walking out to the fucking cage with that thing around it. You know, we don't know. I mean, I hope that doesn't happen, but like that, yeah, there's some voodoo around that belt, as we've all spoken about.
Yeah, but nah. No one defends that title. So like if Dave's going to get the title shot next, he'll probably win it because no one can defend that title. It's cursed, right?
Yeah, that's what it's looking like. But yeah, obviously, yeah, the dude went out there and he got a win and he beat someone that was very experienced and one of the top lightweights in the region and has been for a long time. So yeah, if the champ feels like he wants to defend his belt in September against him, it's whatever. I'm still going to watch it. I'm still going to be all about it because I'd be interested to see how that plays out because obviously Quinlan's got a very well-rounded game. So it'd be interesting to see how he deals with the grappling and the wrestling threat of Martinez, as well as, you know, if he's able to capitalize on the feet like he did against Donnelly. So I'd be interested to watch it regardless. But looking at it from like a non-eternal fan type thing, if I'm just a guy that's like watching, you know, like fights and someone's like, hey, do you want to see this guy and this guy fight? And then they go to me, this guy's already fought for the belt. He's had it twice. And then he's like lost a fight, lost the belt, won a fight and fought for the belt again. I'm going to be like, nah, can we see something else? Like, you know what I mean? But yeah, I'll still watch it either way, you know, as the person that's more versed in the sport and has more knowledge and, you know, is more sort of closely connected. Yeah, I'll watch that fight 100%. It's intriguing to me to watch that fight stylistically between Quinlan and Martinez, but it's just going to depend on what all parties involved decide to do.
And Jack Becker is kind of the ghost that sort of lingers over that division as well, right? We don't really know where he's at, so
he's healthy.
Yeah, if he's back, then, you know, he didn't, I mean, I guess he did lose the title technically, but really, you know, it was an unfortunate sort of circumstance in which he lost it. Does he get the first crack? Does he get straight back in there, or does he need to reel off a win beforehand? It's kind of a bit of a weird landscape at the moment, isn't it?
I'd much rather watch, I'd say, because I believe he's competing at the King's Cup at the end of this month, doing a grappling match. So maybe that's like his, just like a little way to step out there and kind of move around on that leg. And after he's done, been so diligent with his rehab and everything like that, and he's been training, I heard he's been back training and he's been killing it. So maybe that's like a way for him to sort of get the cobwebs off and just kind of move around in some capacity. And then, yeah, I imagine he'll be looking to fight. I'd hope so. But yeah, you could probably do that. You could throw together. Why don't you throw together a matchup between like Becker and Quinlan, and then you give Dom Marfan Dave Martinez. I'm not mad at that, because then, you know, Dave wins that fight. He's coming off two wins. Fights the winner of the lightweight title. You know, cool. Then, you know, that makes sense too. Gives Dom Marfan an opportunity to fight a higher caliber lightweight. He goes out there and gets a dub. Suddenly, you know, especially if Quinlan's still the champ, suddenly we've got an interesting storyline because he's given Quinlan the hardest fight of all his fights, in my opinion. That was a very, very, you know, technical fight, very good fight. So although he lost, you know, he himself would be coming off two wins, and especially a win over someone like Martinez, that's going to push you forward and it's going to make sense for you to fight for a belt, especially when you have history with the current champion. Yeah, there's options.
I don't mind that, that matchup, but probably just putting the Dave Martinez hat on here, is that a hard sell for him? Don Marfan, I think his record's 2-1, something like that. He's sort of still, you know, still very much a prospect at the moment. You know, he's obviously a talented one, we know that. But yeah, if you're Dave and you're sort of hunting for a title shot, and then they come to you with sort of a, you know, an up and coming fighter with three pro fights on his record so far, and Don Marfan, do you look at that and go, what does this do for me?
In a way, yeah, I could see why that'd be the sort of thing. But I think he's done it before, where he's fought someone where it was kind of like at the time that they fought, their record wasn't. So it was like, yeah, you look at it and you go, or experience wise, and that you go, okay, well, like, how's this? What do I get out of this? Because if I win, they're going to say, oh, I just beat a dude who shouldn't have been in there with me anyway, or whatever. But then at the same time, he's gone the other end and he's fought someone who's stupid experience. Like, he's done it. He's done that as well. So it's like, it just depends on. I don't know how much, like, obviously if you feel like you deserve to fight for the belt next and that's what you're going to push for, then that's what he's going to do. 100%. Can't knock someone for doing that. Cool. All the power to him. Hope it works out. But at the same time, he might want to just go, you know, keep the activity, get another fight in. And that's not an easy fight. Although he's less experienced, that's not an easy fight. It's not going to be just a clear cut fight where Dave's just going to come out, drive him against the cage, take him down and submit him. Because both of those guys are skilled in those areas. So I'd be interested to see how that plays out. I don't know. It's just going to depend on how active you want to be, and if you want to fight and just push for another fight, if you're going to be happy to do that, just to kind of like really cement yourself. Coming off a loss and then a win and then fighting for a title, as opposed to you lost, you strung together two wins over two dangerous people, and now you're fighting for a belt again. Yeah, it looks a bit better.
Yeah, definitely sort of strengthens the case, doesn't it? But I guess it kind of reads on paper like a sort of a high risk, low reward sort of scenario. But yeah, like you say, Dave's not a guy to shy away from a challenge. So yeah, we could certainly see it happening.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to get to UFC 290. Obviously, it's International Fight Week for the UFC. Obviously, a bit of an Aussie flavour on this card. So we'll go through, we'll go down the list. The first one on the early prelims is, of course, the Turkish Delight, Shannon Ross, who's taking on Jesus Aguilar. Shannon's obviously had a bit of a tough start to his UFC tenure. Obviously, after that banger fight he had on the Dana White Contender Series, he lost a pretty quick KO in his promotional debut. So yeah, where do you see Shannon and how do you see this matchup?
It's a good fight for him. Obviously, everyone in the flyweight division, you're not going to sit there and break down fights and go, oh well, this person's going to be better here and better there. Everyone's well rounded. Everyone's fast. Everyone's explosive. Everyone's experienced. So it really just comes down to who shows up on the day and is able to present the problems and play their game better on the day and you know, find success that way. So that's just how it is with the flyweights. Everyone's so technical because they're all smaller guys, right? So they're constantly going with people who are bigger, stronger. So their technique is impeccable. They're fast. They're explosive. Like, and obviously we're seeing like these flyweights pack power too. So, it's a good fight for him. In my opinion, it's a must-win fight. If I'm breaking it down, it's a must-win fight. And in my opinion, if I was in his shoes right now, a win isn't enough for me. I need to come out there and finish this guy. I need to put him away and put him away emphatically. That's the motivation and the energy that I'd sort of have, especially, you know, going into this fight. So I'd imagine that Shannon's got that. He's planning to come in there and win, and planning to come in there and put on a show. It's International Fight Week. It's a giant card. It's a massive week, massive event. So I hope that he's able to go out there and get to put together his game plan and, you know, go out there and get the win. Obviously, his last fight, it's hard, man. He got kicked in the liver. We all know, you know, if you get kicked in the fucking liver, like, you just go on pause and you just got, that's just it. Like, you're going to be fine. 10 minutes later, you're going to be five, 10 minutes later, you're going to be absolutely fine. But for that period of time, like, you're done. And like, that's just how it is. That's just how it goes. So it's unfortunate that that's how it went, especially on that Perth card. But I reckon he's going to be more motivated than ever and go out there and put on a show. From what I can see, he's, you know, left no stone unturned in his preparation, and everyone has been telling me that he looks the goods. He's put in the work, so I'm excited. Hopefully he can go out there and start it off with a nice win.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess it's kind of got to be a win at all costs, doesn't it? Like, I mean, he obviously didn't get a chance to sort of show what he can do in the first fight. Like you say, he sort of copped that kick inside the first minute, so it's kind of a bit of a bit of an anti-climax, isn't it, when you sort of, you know, the fight's over inside a minute. But, you know, if you, he really just has to win, doesn't he? Like, you know, he's obviously, he came in through the Dana White's Contender Series where he did get stopped and, you know, obviously had the appendicitis, and, you know, we all know the sort of backstory regarding that. He's lost his first fight. It's probably, you know, if the UFC is looking at the roster and he's 0-2 sort of in his UFC tenure, then it probably looks a bit, the situation looks a little bit dicey for him, but obviously he's not going to be thinking about that. He's going to be thinking about, you know, showing what he can do and getting that first UFC win and pushing on from there.
Yeah, obviously the amount of talent that's coming through, the amount of fighters there are, the amount of people that are just clawing to get their way in. Like, obviously, you know, I guess from the UFC's perspective, they're sort of spoiled for choice, right? People and upcoming prospects and fighters and stuff like that. So yeah, back in the day, it was, especially in that division, it was a lot harder. There'd be a lot harder for that to be the case, where you maybe lose a couple of fights and then they go, all right, see you later, because, you know, the talent, you know, the number of talent wasn't as, you know, up to the same level as it is now, like the amount of people and stuff. But now, you know, there's killers coming up and they're everywhere, and it just keeps going and going and going. So from a UFC standpoint, it's probably a lot easier if someone has a couple losses for them to just go, all right, catch you later, you know. And especially, and as ruthless as that is, I, you know, it makes sense, right? But you, unless you're like, you've been in the UFC for like X amount of years and you're an established name, and, you know, like you kind of saw with Cowboy and kind of like you saw with Sam Alvey and you kind of saw with something with like some of these people, Joe Lozon, etc., they like had a bunch of losses, and then, you know, it was a while before the UFC kind of was like, all right, catch it. But it's a sort of different situation. You know, you're talking about a fresh prospect in the UFC as opposed to someone who's an established household name, arguably Hall of Famer, you know, someone like Lozon, someone like Cowboy, you know. So it's like, you got to sort of see what, you know, weigh up the options, right? Kind of, if from their perspective, it's a business and they know that they've got all this other talent that's waiting to get into the sort of, get in there and have that opportunity. So it'd be hard, man. Like, those, I'd imagine you're like, say you sign your first contract, if it's like a 3-fight, 4-fight deal or whatever, I'd imagine that those 3-4 fights are going to be, in my opinion, all your fights, every fighter approaches the fight as a must win, and they want to win and they want to get it, you know, go out there and get a finish and put on a show and cement it. But I'd imagine for those, knowing what you know now and the amount of talent that's out there and stuff like that, and especially if you're in one of those divisions, like, yeah, you kind of have to approach those first couple of fights as, I need to win and I need to like get this shit done. And then after that, cool, you got a bit more breathing room, you know, unless you're in one of those sort of more shallow divisions, right? Like if you're a light heavyweight, you know, et cetera, you have a bit more breathing room because the talent's not as stacked. But if we're looking at flyweight, bantamweight, featherweight, lightweight, welterweight, like it's just a murderer's row of talent already there and then waiting to get in. So they've got it. Yeah. They're probably looking at it from that perspective going, you need to perform or we're going to just give the next person a go.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we got people like Steve Ursig, who, you know, a world class fighter, you know, ranked number 14 at the moment. You know, it's a tough division, you know, so you can't sort of be carrying people, I guess. But hopefully Shannon gets it done. You know, we know he's a talented fighter. He's a sort of popular member of the local scene. So hopefully he gets that W and manages to push on.
Fuck yeah!
Now we've got Jimmy Crute, obviously on the prelim card as well. He's rematching Alonzo Menafield. Now they obviously fought to a draw back in, I think it was January, February, somewhere around
February,
there.
Yeah.
February. I haven't done my research here, but from memory, I think Menafield got a point deduction that sort of resulted in the draw. Is that right? Did I make
yeah,
that?
Yeah, it was something like that. Right. It was like a, there was definitely, it was a point deduction and some stuff. And then obviously we went to a draw and then they made the decision how to run it back. So I think in hindsight, it was probably a good thing that they did, that they sort of just went to a draw and stuff like that. But I think both guys had a few hurdles that they had to overcome even getting to the fight from memory, from what I sort of looked into after. So I believe that both guys are fit, both guys are healthy, both guys are ready to put on a show. So yeah, it's a, hopefully Jimmy Crew can go out there and showcase the potential that we know he has. I'm leaning towards Jimmy Crew getting around to TKO. I'm going to go high kick too. I think you can put him away this time. Knowing now that he's felt him in there and knowing that, knowing what he knows. And I think it's going to be the same approach for Alonzo. He's going to have the same sort of motivation. He's going to think, yep, been in there with this guy. Let's go out there and put on a show. But I feel like, honestly, Jimmy Crew is just going to catch him. I feel like he's going to put him away.
Yeah, awesome. And I guess it was a fun fight the first time around. But yeah, like you say, like Jimmy Crute, I think you said he had some hurdles sort of coming into the fight. You know, it sort of seems to be a bit of a reoccurring theme with Jimmy, some sort of injury issues and those sorts of things. So if he's fit, then, he's a very dangerous fighter for any opponent. So yeah, hopefully he's fit and firing and he can put on a show on the weekend.
Yeah, I reckon he will. I think, like I said, I'm really leaning towards the TKO, so I think that's what we're going to see, and then we're going to see him sort of have his momentum back and keep moving forward.
Yeah. Also on the prelims, we've got Jack Della Maddalena getting back in there as well. He's obviously been on a tear since he joined the UFC. Unfortunately, he was supposed to fight Sean Brady. Sean's had that sort of elbow injury, which has sort of led to a little bit of a social media spat between the pair. But that was sort of an exciting matchup that we've kind of lost there. But Josiah Harrell is stepping in for his UFC debut. He's 7-0, so he's undefeated from the local scene over there. But kind of like Jack Della's kind of mentioned on social media himself, you know, there's levels, right? Like, you know, this is an undefeated guy that's coming in, but this is a big step up in class fighting someone like Jack Della Maddalena. So yeah, hopefully Jack can get the job done and sort of move forward with a matchup with Brady or someone of that caliber.
I reckon Jack round one TKO knockout, and then if I'm him, I'm moving past Sean Brady and I'm calling for someone that's like much higher in the rankings. That'd be sort of the go, I think, if he goes out there and gets another first round knockout. Makes sense, give that guy someone that's higher ranked.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, like, you know, he's right up there, isn't he? He's been been in like extremely impressive so far in his UFC tenure. So, and we know that that Dana White thinks really highly of him, as he should. So hopefully he can sort of push his way up there. What is he? He's 4-0 in the UFC so far. He's taken on some short notice fights. He's got three bonuses along the way there. So this is a guy who's he's paying his dues. Four first round finishes so far, and it looks like he's got a good opportunity to make that five.
Yeah, no, 100%. I see him putting this fight away. Josiah's obviously very talented. He's got some really good skills, but I think Della's just gonna touch him and he's gonna fall.
Yeah, certainly looks that way on paper. So we've also got the Anzac Slayer, Jalen Turner's got another one in his crosshairs. He's we know that Jalen has beaten, who's he beaten? He's beaten Kulabau, he's beaten Jamie Malarkey and Brad Riddell. And Callum Potter as well. So, you know, the UFC likes to almost exclusively match him with Anzac fighters. And this time he's got Dan Hooker in his sights, who's obviously an extremely tough opponent. So, what do you reckon of this one? It's kind of an interesting sort of stylistic matchup, right? Jalen Turner's a really long and sort of rangy lightweight. Dan Hooker, we know, is a fantastic striker, and he's pretty big and long himself for the weight class. So, yeah, what do you make of the matchup?
Yeah, this is an interesting one because Jalen Turner's like 6'2", 6'3", Dan Hooker's 6'4", very long, very rangy. Both of them have submission threats as well, So, yeah, this is a very interesting fight. It's a hard one for me to sort of – obviously, I'd like to see Dan Hooker go out there and clean him up and run through him, but, at the same time, it's like, it's just not one of those fights where you can say that that's exactly how it's going to go. Like, this is going to be a fucking war. It's going to be a scrap. It's not going to the judges, I know that. Someone's being put away, but it just depends. And Jalen's also so talented, very likable guy, very nice guy, same as Dan. You know, you're kind of looking at both these dudes and you don't want either one of them to lose, really. Obviously, we got to go with the Anzacs. We've got to support the Anzacs, but at the same time, it's a fuck. Jalen's such a likable guy. He just goes out there and does his thing. There's no trash talk. There's no bullshit. He just gets in there and wants to fight, and he'll be happy to sit down afterwards, regardless of the result, and have a beer with you. So, yeah. But no, I think this is going to be a violent, violent war of just, yeah, very high level, dangerous guys that are just going to put their attributes to use and look to bounce bones off each other's skulls. So, yeah. But ultimately, if I were to pick it, I'm going to go with Dan Hooker for a round two TKO. I think that's going to be a good option.
Yeah, I mean it's one of those ones, like it's a like a fan friendly sort of matchup, as you kind of touched on there, and yeah, it's probably like a genuine 50-50, right? Like Jalen Turner's sort of this I guess rising star. Dan Hooker's sort of you know, he's been there and done that. Like if you look at his record, he's 2-4 in his last six, but his four losses are against Dustin Poirier, Michael Chandler, Islam Makhachev, and Arnold Allen. That's a guy who's been in there with everyone, you know. So like he's a tough out for pretty much any opponent. So yeah, be interesting to see how Jalen you know, steps up to the plate.
Yeah, and obviously, fuck, looking at it, like Jalen's obviously going to have that confidence of, you know, he's beaten all these Anzacs and this is just another one that he's been given, to another lamb to the slaughter, as you'd say. But but also, fuck, at the same time, I bet Dan's super motivated to come in there and get one back for the Anzacs and put Turner away. But nah, obviously I'm leaning towards Dan to get the finish and the win, but I'm just excited to see this fight. It's going to be fight of the night, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah, that looks that way. Probably this or Crute versus Menafield are probably two pretty good bets for fight of the night.
Yeah, that's probably, yeah. Those are the ones you'd have at the top of your list.
Absolutely. I mean, just looking down Dan Hooker's record, I don't want to bang on about this too much, but he's got Yair Rodriguez, Jim Miller, Gilbert Burns, Edson Barboza, Ally Quinter, Paul Felder, and obviously the four that we've... the four that I sort of reeled off before in Poirier, Chandler, Makhachev, and Arnold Allen. That guy has fought everyone. Like, you know, what a career he's put on. You know, and he's been in the UFC now for, I don't even know, what does it say, since 2014, for 9 years, and he's just fought just the murderer's row. Like, that guy has run the gauntlet. So, yeah, it'd be good to see him get a win and sort of push himself back into contention.
Yeah, 100%. A win for him puts him back in the top 10, and then we start building towards those guys in the top 5 and back towards the title. So it's very interesting, very interesting. And that division is so scary, man, so stacked. You look at that top 10, top 15, and you're like, it's just, yeah, killers everywhere. So, yeah, if it ends up being that Dan goes on a big run now and he fights for a belt and he can win a belt at lightweight, you would just sit there and look at that guy's resume and go, holy shit, man, he's fought. You couldn't say, like with some of the other people that won titles, where people will be like, oh, well, they never fought. Like, you look at Islam, it's like he's fought one person in the top 5, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's always these things. With Dan, you'd sit there and go, well, this dude fought everybody, all the killers. And, you know, so you'd be like, holy shit. But, yeah, it's exciting. It's exciting. And he's, you know, He's a new mythical fighter. He's dyed the hair blonde. He's fucking all about it. He's out here taking a page out of Charlie Olives' book. So I'm excited, man. I'm excited. Very excited.
Absolutely. And of course, we're excited for the fight that's on just before the main event and co-main event. It's probably one that has you a little bit torn. I don't know, Lockjaw, but got Robert Whittaker versus Dracus Duplessis. Obviously, that's the middleweight title eliminator between the Aussie and the South African. So I guess, first of all, where do you sit on this? When you've got a protier in there against an Aussie, where's your sort of allegiance lie?
Yeah, this is tricky. Oh, fuck, man. Like, I obviously, yeah. I really like Robert Whittaker, too. I think he's an exceptional mixed martial artist and just a kill, absolute gun. Obviously, you know, he's another one. He's the dad. You got to cheer for the dads. I really like Robert Whittaker, man. He's really cool. I don't really want to see him lose. I want to see him just, you know, can keep continuing on. Fuck, I'd love to see Izzy and Rob 3. I think that'd just be exceptional. You know, exceptional fight again. But at the same time, yeah, you know, like from like being that I'm from South Africa and knowing, you know, you got to support and then knowing Drikus and that too, like you want to see him win, you want to see him kill it and continue going on. However, straight off the bat, he's going to do it, you know, we want to see Drikus do it for the real Africans. I like Drikus and I think he's a really good fighter and I think that he's got all the talent in the world and he can potentially continue on and do really good things. And we'd love to see him fight Izzy for the belt too. Same thing. I'd be stoked about that. But I do not condone any of this dude's comments and silliness that he said in the lead up to any of this. I don't like, I know what he was trying to say. And it was like, if you look back at what he said, if he took the end part of what he said and just started with that and then just stopped, it would have been cool. But yeah, so I just, yeah, I don't know. It's just all that's just silly to me, man. Like, I get you got to be proud of where you're from and, you know, whatever and stuff like that. But I'm going to just put it out there for everyone. I'm from South Africa. I was born there. You know, I'm always going to have some sort of love for South Africa and stuff like that. But it's a shithole, bro. Like, I'm just going to put it, it's just a shithole, bro. Like, what are you proud about being from? You're proud about the idea of being from South Africa. You're not actually proud of being from Africa because if you're proud of being from Africa, you'd like, yeah, you'd be, you know, like you need to get your fucking head read. That place is a shithole. I'm telling you that now. The place is a shithole. So that just makes those comments even sillier to me. Like, I get it, man. You're based there. You train there. You love it there. You love your country. You're proud of being from South Africa. I love being from South Africa too. I'm proud of being South African too. I'm always going to have that as my, you know, I was born there. It's never going to change. But the only love that I have for that place to this day now is my family and some of the friends that I still got there, as opposed to the country and how it is and the quality of living and the standard of living. And it's a fucking shit show. It's a shit place. And I will never, ever, 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 ever in my life go back there unless I was getting paid to be there for an MMA fight in the UFC on a fight card in Africa, in Johannesburg, Pretoria, wherever you want to do it. But, you know, unless I'm being paid, I don't want to be there. I don't want to go there. So, yeah, I don't know. It's just silliness to me that all these sort of comments and that were being thrown around and blah, 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 blah. This is dumb. Just be an MMA fighter. Just go, I'm from South Africa. I'm a MMA fighter. I want to fight for a world title and I want to bring my belt back home to my friends and family. Wicked. All that other shit, throw it out the window because you're proud about a place that's an absolute shit show. But yeah, other than that, this fight's going to be a absolute dog fight in a sense, because I feel like for the first two rounds, it's going to be just a dog fight. It's going to be a dog fight because Drikus makes the fight gritty, makes it dirty. You know, it's, you know, fights in a phone booth type deal. Whitaker, you know, he's had that with Romero twice. So, and he's had that with Brunson. He's had that, you know, with a couple other guys, Tavares. So yeah, he's going to rise to that occasion. But ultimately, I got to try and split myself now. I got to take the Australian away. I got to take the South African away. I got to throw this shit all away and break this down for what it is. I think Whitaker's going to fucking piece him up. Like, looking at it as a just analyst, sort of put my analyst hat on and break it down. Whitaker's got way too many weapons and he's way too good. He's way too experienced. His fight IQ is too good. I ultimately think he's going to be able to put Drikus away. And you know, if he goes out there and lands that trademark 1-2, that leaping 1-2 head kick, I'm not going to be surprised. So yeah. If you want a prediction, you want to know how to bet your money, you want to know who's going to win, go Robert Whitaker by TKO or KO.
Yeah, there you go. Just for the record, I did not see that that plot twist coming there. You know, the whole South Africa is a shithole sort of thing. That caught me off. Did not see that as the direction we were going in there. But just, I guess, for the for those who don't know, can you enlighten us a little bit on the sort of the comments that Drake has made about sort of, you know, being a real African and those sorts of things? Just gives a bit of context.
So what he was trying to say is. He's born in South Africa. He's been living his entire life there. He trains there. He's based there. he's never gone overseas and based himself somewhere else. And like, he never went to America. He never went to some of these other places and went to one of these bigger gyms to try and like, you know, train and do that. He was like, I'm here. I'm going to do it right here with the people that I've had with me from the start. And we're going to go all the way and we're going to, you know, go for a world title. Much like Leon Edwards. Leon Edwards never, you know, he briefly trained at AKA, but he like for a bit, for a camp or two or something like that. But he never like moved to another country. He's stayed in England. He's stayed in Birmingham and he's done his thing. It's a much, very similar thing. So I guess that's what he was trying to say. He's going to be the first African champion residing in Africa. That's, I guess, in what he was trying to say. But the way he said it and the way he worded it was just kind of like not in that way. It was he kind of said he what he ended up saying was that he's the only real African fighting in the UFC. He'll be the only real African champion because he's you know, based and lives in South Africa. And the fact that Kamaru and Izzy and Francis aren't, they're not real Africans and real African champions. And that's obviously when the silliness in that came out, like, cause that's just stupidity. But that's also, you know, I don't know. It's a byproduct of just like, you're talking so much in this sport. Obviously you talk long enough, you're going to end up saying some stupid shit. And then, yeah, so that, like, look at Sean Strickland. Every week that guy's saying something that's fucking retarded, so excuse my language, but you know, he's like, it's so at the same time it's that, and then it's a combination of like, English is Drickus's second language as well, not giving him a pass with that, but also, you know, that factors in too. It was just like I said, if you look at the whole statement, if you go and look at it on MMA Junkie or wherever you want to look at, if you go and look at the whole statement that he's of what he said, if he said the end part of what he said and that's what he said and just stopped, didn't say anything else, you'd have been like, sweet, cool, whatever. Because it would have been like, I'm proudly South African. I'm based here. I've done it here from the start with the same people. I want to go and win the belt, bring it back to Africa, bring it back to South Africa, and cool, that's it. But yeah, it ended up just going out of control. And obviously Izzy responded and he said things as well. And it was like, just kind of got crazy. And then, we couldn't reel it in. Cause unfortunately in the world, in any avenue, any asset, any sport, once color or race or ethnicity is brought in, it's like throwing, you know, a nuclear bomb on an already burning fire. It's just going to blow up too fast before you can contain it, and you can't bring it back or reel it in, and you're not going to get people to sort of be like, oh wait, this is what you meant. It's just, it's too far gone. But from a promoting point of view for the UFC, if Drickus wins, you're fucking going to be stoked, because you've got some real fuel to put a good fight together.
Yeah, this like you say, this racial sort of ethnic stuff, it's a really sort of it's always a delicate subject. You know, you're walking a tightrope when if you're going to sort of approach that and say things, and you know, you've got to be really careful about how you word it. And unfortunately, MMA fighters are not typically noted wordsmiths, outside of a few exceptions. And obviously, again, like you say, someone whose second language is English, it's it was a pretty dangerous thing to sort of put out there, and it's sort of come across the wrong way. But like you touched on this, exactly where I was going with this was now it's created this sort of beef or sort of rivalry with Israel Adesanya. So like we've talked about before, this is the UFC is probably rooting for Drakus Duplessis here, right? Like, because they've done Whitaker Adesanya twice, Adesanya's won both. Obviously it's an incredible matchup. Whitaker is clearly the second best middleweight in the world right now by quite a distance, just on paper at the moment. but still, it's like, it's kind of the third matchup. It's not like a trilogy. It's not like they're 1-1. It's sort of the third time they're doing it. Whereas this whole Drakus Duplessis thing, they've got this beef. It's kind of fresh blood for the in the middleweight sort of title shot. Surely the UFC is kind of hoping it for it to go that way, right?
Yeah, the UFC is, Izzy is, Drakus is. So the only person that isn't is Robert Whittaker, and he's going to come and spoil the party.
It certainly looks that way on paper, doesn't it? It's sort of like you touched on there, like, Rob is, again, like I mentioned, second best fighter in the middleweight division by some distance. So it's going to take some doing. Obviously, Drakus is, he's a sort of guy, you almost hold your breath when you watch him fighting, right? Like, he just sort of, everything is just just full on. He's just all in, just like high pace. You know, he looks like he's gassing out, but he never does. You know, so it's going to be interesting to see how sort of Rob handles that, and it'll be again an exciting fight while it lasts.
Yeah, 100%. Especially if Drickers goes out there and puts Rob away, like if he like finishes him, holy shit. Now everyone's going to be like, oh, fuck, like we got to see this fight. So it's going to be interesting. I'm excited.
Absolutely. And of course, we're excited for the main event, Alexander Volkanovski versus Yair Rodriguez for the featherweight, the UFC featherweight title. Yeah, obviously you've got the inside track on Volk. You've been, you've been in the trenches with him, getting put through tables and things like that. So, how's he looking?
Yeah, the guy's like obviously once again leveled up tremendously. He's back down to featherweight and just fast, explosive. Just killer prep as always. The dude looking the goods, man. He's gonna absolutely dominate Rodriguez. As you know, Rodriguez is obviously talented, very dangerous, very unpredictable. But his unpredictability makes him predictable, because when he stops being unpredictable, that means he's frozen. That means he doesn't know how to manage what you're presenting to him. Then it's going to open more doors, and then you're going to end up being able to see Volk put him away, much like you saw with Holloway. He started off flashy, crazy, unpredictable. Eventually his feet were planted, he was flat, and he stood there throwing punches in the pocket. You know, unfortunately, if you abandon what you're good at, like, it's hard with Volk, right? What you're good at already isn't good enough. And then if you abandon that, you're fucked even more. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if what you're good at doesn't work for you and you throw it at him and it doesn't come, like nothing happens with it, now you're just sitting there going, oh, fuck. Like we saw with Ortega. Ortega threw up his two best submissions. He threw up a guillotine and a triangle. Volk stuffed both, and that was it. You know, he's fucked. You saw it with the third fight with Max. Max's volume, his distance, his timing, everything got shut down, and he just got obliterated. Same thing with Rodriguez. Yeah, at the start, round one, he's gonna be jumping around, throwing all sorts of kicks, being all crazy. But I honestly see Volk just crumbling him. He's just gonna crumble him, man. He's just too fit, too strong. His fight IQ is too good. You know, I don't even like the guy, and I've got to go with him, right? He's going to kill it. But nah. Obviously, I've got a closer sort of eye in what he's sort of doing and what he's looking like, obviously being in the gym with him. But yeah, it's very hard. Even if I wasn't based out of freestyle and didn't see every day what I see, it's very hard for me to look past him and pick against him. You just look at what he's done and look at, it's just not like, it's not a, this is one of those ones where it's like, I mean, it's cool for Rodriguez to be fighting him, and it's like, you can see, you know, it's the biggest fight of his life or whatever, and he's going for a world title, like a proper world title. But the level gap is just too much. And I know a bunch of people are like, oh yeah, Rodriguez is on a tear and stuff like that. And I saw someone else actually post this as well. But is he on a tear? He beat Jeremy Stephens, lost to Holloway. Then he won against Ortega via injury, and then he had an impressive showing against Josh Emmett. But, you know, what are we talking about here? Look at those four fights, and then look at Volko's last four fights. You had a fight against Islam Makhachev at 155 that he didn't lose, but it's on there as a loss. We'll tee that up as a loss. But even then, look at that fight. Then you had Holloway, Zombie, and Ortega. And he just dominated everyone. So
yeah, and two more wins. Two more wins against Holloway into that mix. Jose Aldo, Chad Mendes. You know, there's some names right there.
What are we talking about here? Like, I mean, I get it. Rodriguez looked good, and he put on a great show in February against Emmett. But you know, Josh Emmett, very talented mixed martial artist, but. You know, obviously a dangerous fighter, very high, very durable, very tough, but very one-dimensional. He's got an overhand right.
Yeah, and he's sort of gone on to lose his next fight as well. So it's kind of like, you know, what is it? Emmett must be 38 years old. He's 37
37 or something.
So it's kind of like, I don't know, yeah. I mean, it's still a good win. Like, you've got to beat guys like Emmett, you know, he's still a talented fighter and those sorts of things, but it doesn't, the resume doesn't really stack up, does it? But, and then if you look at the matchup on paper, it just feels like Volk just has just too many sort of routes to victory, doesn't he? Like, he's obviously, like, he's a better striker. If he wants to take it to the ground and belt Yeo-Yi's face in, he can do that as well if he wants to, you know. So I feel like outside of and obviously we're biased, you know, we're Aussies and you know you're his teammate and that sort of thing, but it feels like outside of Yeo-Yi throwing a jumping spinning fucking back elbow or something like that and landing, you know, some sort of Hail Mary shot, and we know he's done that before, like, you know, the Korean Zombie knockout was one of the craziest knockouts you'll ever see. But you know, unless he does something like that, it really just feels like you know, Volk's gonna do work here, doesn't it?
And the window for him to do that is the first 2 minutes of the first round.
Mm.
After that, it's gone. I promise you, it's gone. Like, and if you're coming out for round two, I promise you the opportunity for you to pull off some shit like that is just not a thing. Especially if he does decide to take you down and put you on your back, like, you're gonna just sap that out. Like, the jumping, the flashy shit, that's all going out the window. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm trying to look at it, even if I try and be unbiased and try and pick a way for where Rodriguez could find success, and I just, it's very difficult outside of a crazy Hail Mary shot. That's his only avenue to victory. Because he's not subbing Volk off his back like he did Emmett, I can promise you that. He's not going to wrestle him and control him against the fence. And then, yeah, striking-wise, the fight IQ, the level gap, the power gap, the speed gap, like, it's, yeah, I don't know. I just don't see it.
Yeah, I think that's the way this matchup looks, isn't it? Like... Yeah, I mean, if Ortega couldn't put Volk away, you know, off his back with those submissions, then it's hard to see how, you know, yeah, he's going to be able to pull that off. Obviously, he's got a submission in his last fight, but, you know, there's a difference in levels between, you know, if we're doing MMA math, I guess, in a way, you know, there's a difference in grappling between Ortega and Yair, so it's hard to see how he's going to put Volk away. But I guess how's the weight looking? You know, he's obviously just stepped up to featherweight. I think it was earlier this year, wasn't it? And stepped up to lightweight. Now he's stepping back down to featherweight. I don't know. Did he gain a lot of size for lightweight? And sort of how's he sort of going with sort of, I guess, sort of sucking back down to the featherweight Volk?
He's just, yeah, like he's just as strong as he was, if not stronger, at lightweight. But he's just faster and explosive. Like, he's even faster and even more explosive. It's just, and you know, it's just, it's insane. Like, it's, yeah, it makes no sense. It makes no sense how much of a freak that guy is. But yeah, he's looking the goods. He's super fast, super explosive. And obviously everyone knows he's super fucking strong. But yeah, it's just, even now, like, after being back at featherweight, he's just, you know, he's the number one fighter in the world, but he's the number one featherweight by a long shot, by an absolute long shot.
Yeah, definitely. So it's like, if he beats Yair, as we sort of expect that he will, you know, is there anything other than the Makhachev matchup for him? Like, it's hard to see sort of where else he goes.
I would like to see him fight Makhachev in October and rematch Makhachev if that's possible. Get that rematch going, like, because I feel like, yeah, everyone wants to see that because of how that fight went. And I feel like this time around, not only does he convincingly beat Makhachev, he probably finishes him, in my opinion. But, I mean, at the same time, though, I would love to see him smash Ilya Topuria's face in just to show him that there's levels in the game and that dude is not on the same, of that same standard yet. He might be down the line, but he's not there yet.
Yeah, it's true. I guess that's an interesting prospect that's sort of there if the Makhachev fight doesn't come back, doesn't come around again.
Yeah, 100%. So they've got those two options, but realistically, best case scenario, Volk smokes Rodriguez and then goes and fights either Islam, or if they do Islam and Charles, fights the winner of Islam and Charles.
Yeah, don't mind that at all. So yeah, I guess your place to come to get all the breakdown of UFC 290 and all those sorts of things will be episode 44 of Fight Talk Down Under. Of course, we'll be back on next week to sort of break down everything that goes down and over the weekend. So in the meantime, let us know if you have any sort of questions. Details are below if you're on YouTube. Otherwise, pardon me, send them through to @FightTalkDownUnder on Instagram. Of course, give us a follow if you haven't already. And of course, like and subscribe, YouTube, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Podbean, Fight News Australia, and iHeartRadio. Lockjaw, what do you want to take us off with?
Yeah, just get behind the Anzacs fighting this weekend and International Fight Week. Let's all get behind fucking all the other combat sports athletes that we got going, you know, boxing, kickboxing, everywhere, all the promotions that we got going. There's a lot happening. Aussie combat sports is red hot right now. And if you don't have plans for September, start fucking, and I'm seeing stuff of them talking about tickets are starting, tickets and ticket packages are starting to come available for Sydney for that UFC show. So if you're someone who wants to go to a UFC event live, you better start getting ready and getting set and getting prepared, because I think it's going to go quick, and even quicker than it did to Perth. I gotta watch it, you never know what might stop you. Here I am, climbing up, feeling great, getting love. Here I go, risk it all, be worth it now, and that's for sure.